in evil, and lifts the soul into the joyful realization of the supreme good. To the divinely wise, knowledge and love are one and inseparable. It is toward the complete realization of this divine love that the whole world is moving. It was for this purpose that the universe came into existence, and every grasping at happiness, every reaching out of the soul toward objects, ideas, and ideals is an effort to realize it. But the world does not realize this love at present because it is grasping at the fleeting shadow and ignoring in its blindness the substance. And so suffering and sorrow continue, and must continue until the world, taught by its self-inflicted pains, discovers the love that is selfless, the wisdom that is calm and full of peace. And this love, this wisdom, this peace, this tranquil state of mind and heart may be attained to, may be realized by all who are willing and ready to yield up self, and who are prepared to humbly enter into a comprehension of all that the giving up of self involves. There is no arbitrary power in the universe, and the strongest chains of fate by which men are bound are self-forged. Men are chained to that which causes suffering because they desire to be so, because they love their chains, because they think their little dark prison of self is sweet and beautiful, and they are afraid that if they desert that prison, they will lose all that is real and worth having. Ye suffer from yourselves. None else compels. None other holds ye that ye live and die. And the indwelling power which forged the chains and built around itself the dark and narrow prison can break away when it desires and wills to do so. And the soul does will to do so when it has discovered the worthlessness of its prison, when long suffering has prepared it for the reception of the boundless light and love. As the shadow follows the form, and as smoke comes after fire, so effect follows cause, and suffering and bliss follow the thoughts and deeds of men. There is no effect in the world around us, but has its hidden or revealed cause, and that cause is in accordance with absolute justice. Men reap a harvest of suffering, because in the near or distant past they have sown the seeds of evil. They reap a harvest of bliss also as a result of their own sowing of the seeds of good. Let a man meditate upon this, let him strive to understand it, and he will then begin to sow only seeds of good, and will burn up the tares and weeds which he has formerly grown in the garden of his heart. The world does not understand the love that is selfless, because it is engrossed in the pursuit of its own pleasures, and cramped within the narrow limits of perishable interests, mistaking in its ignorance those pleasures and interests for real and abiding things. Caught in the flames of fleshly lusts and burning with anguish, it sees not the pure and peaceful beauty of truth. Feeding upon the swinish husks of error and self-delusion, it is shut out from the mansion of all-seeing love. Not having this love, not understanding it, men institute innumerable reforms which involve no inward sacrifice, and each imagines that his reform is going to right the world for ever, while he himself continues to propagate evil by engaging in it in his own heart. That only can be called reform which tends to reform the human heart, for all evil has its rise there, and not until the world, ceasing from selfishness and party strife, has learned the lesson of divine love, will it realize the golden age of universal blessedness. Let the rich cease to despise the poor, and the poor to condemn the rich. Let the greedy learn how to give, and the lustful how to grow pure. Let the partisan cease from strife, and the uncharitable begin to forgive. Let the envious endeavor to rejoice with others, and the slanderers grow ashamed of their conduct. Let men and women take this course, and lo, the golden age is at hand. He, therefore, who purifies his own heart is the world's greatest benefactor. Yet though the world is, and will be for many ages to come, shut out from that age of gold, which is the realization of selfless love, you, if you are willing, may enter it now, by rising above your selfish self, if you will pass from prejudice, hatred, and condemnation, to gentle and forgiving love. Where hatred, dislike, and condemnation are, selfless love does not abide. It resides only in the heart that is ceased from all condemnation. You say, how can I love the drunkard, the hypocrite, the sneak, the murderer? I am compelled to dislike and condemn such men. It is true you cannot love such men emotionally, but when you say that you must perforce dislike and condemn them, you show that you are not acquainted with the great overruling love. For it is possible to attain to such a state of interior enlightenment as will enable you to perceive the train of causes by which these men have become as they are, to enter into their intense sufferings, and to know the certainty of their ultimate purification. Possessed of such knowledge, it will be utterly impossible for you any longer to dislike or condemn them, and you will always think of them with perfect calmness and deep compassion. If you love people and speak of them with praise until they in some way thwart you, or do something of which you disapprove, and then you dislike them and speak of them with dispraise, you are not governed by the love which is of God. If in your heart you are continually arraigning and condemning others, selfless love is hidden from you. He who knows that love is at the heart of all things and has realized the all-sufficing power of that love has no room in his heart for condemnation. Men, not knowing this love, constitute themselves judge and executioner of their fellows, forgetting that there is the eternal judge and executioner. And in so far as men deviate from them in their own views, their particular reforms and methods, they brand them as fanatical, unbalanced, lacking judgment, sincerity, and honesty. In so far as others approximate to their own standards, do they look upon them as being everything that is admirable? Such are the men who are centered in self. But he whose heart is centered in the supreme love does not so brand and classify men, does not seek to convert men to his own views, not to convince them of the superiority of his methods. Knowing the law of love, he lives it and maintains the same calm attitude of mind and sweetness of heart toward all. The debased and the virtuous, the foolish and the wise, the learned and the unlearned, the selfish and the unselfish, receive alike the benediction of his tranquil thought. You can only attain to this supreme knowledge, this divine love, by unremitting endeavor in self-discipline, and by gaining victory after victory over yourself. Only the pure in heart see God, and when your heart is sufficiently purified, you will enter into the new birth, and the love that does not die, nor change, nor end in pain and sorrow, will be awakened within you, and you will be at peace. He who strives for the attainment of divine love is ever seeking to overcome the spirit of condemnation, for where there is pure spiritual knowledge, condemnation cannot exist, and only in the heart that has become incapable of condemnation is love perfected and fully realized. The Christian condemns the atheist. The atheist satirizes the Christian. The Catholic and Protestant are ceaselessly engaged in wordy warfare, and the spirit of strife and hatred rules where peace and love should be. He that hateth his brother is a murderer, a crucifier of the divine spirit of love, and until you can regard men of all religions, and of no religion, with the same impartial spirit, with all freedom from dislike, and with perfect equanimity, you have yet to strive for that love which bestows upon its possessor freedom and salvation. The realization of divine knowledge, selfless love, utterly destroys the spirit of condemnation, disperses all evil, and lifts the consciousness to that height of pure vision where love, goodness, justice are seen to be universal, supreme, all-conquering, indestructible. Train your mind in strong, impartial, and gentle thought. Train your heart in purity and compassion. Train your tongue to silence and to true and stainless speech. So shall you enter the way of holiness and peace, and shall ultimately realize the immortal love. So living without seeking to convert, you will convince without arguing. You will teach. Not cherishing ambition, the wise will find you out, and without striving to gain men's opinions, you will subdue their hearts. For love is all-conquering, all-powerful. and the thoughts and deeds and words of love can never perish. To know that love is universal, supreme, all-sufficing, to be freed from the trammels of evil, to be quit of the inward unrest, to know that all men are striving to realize the truth each in his own way, to be satisfied, sorrowless, serene. This is peace. This is gladness. This is immortality. This is divinity. This is the realization of selfless love. I stood upon the shore and saw the rocks resist the onslaught of the mighty sea, and when I thought how all the countless shocks they had withstood through an eternity, I said, "To wear away this solid main, the ceaseless efforts of the waves are vain." But when I thought how they the rocks had rent, and saw the sand and shingles at my feet, poor passive remnants of resistance spent, tumbled and tossed where they the waters meet, then saw I ancient landmarks neath the waves, and knew the waters held the stones their slaves. I saw the mighty work the waters wrought by patient softness and unceasing flow, how they the proudest promontory brought unto their feet and mossy hills laid low, how the soft drops the adamantine wall conquered at last and brought it to its fall. And then I knew that hard resisting sin should yield at last to love's soft ceaseless roll, coming and going, ever flowing in upon the proud rocks of the human soul, that all resistance should be spent and past, and every heart yield unto it at last. 5. Entering into the Infinite. From the beginning of time, man, in spite of his bodily appetites and desires, in the midst of all his clinging to earthly and impermanent things, has ever been intuitively conscious of the limited, transient, and illusionary nature of his material existence, and in his sane and silent moments has tried to reach out into a comprehension of the infinite, and has turned with tearful aspiration toward the restful reality of the eternal heart. While vainly imagining that the pleasures of earth are real and satisfying, pain and sorrow continually remind him of their unreal and unsatisfying nature. Ever striving to believe that complete satisfaction is to be found in material things, he is conscious of an inward and persistent revolt against this belief, which revolt is at once a refutation of his essential mortality and an inherent and imperishable proof that only in the immortal, the eternal, the infinite, can he find abiding satisfaction and unbroken peace. And here is the common ground of faith, here the root and spring of all religion, here the soul of brotherhood and the heart of love, that man is essentially and spiritually divine and eternal, and that immersed in mortality and troubled with unrest, he is ever striving to enter into a consciousness of his real nature. The spirit of man is inseparable from the infinite, and can be satisfied with nothing short of the infinite, and the burden of pain will continue to weigh upon man's heart, and the shadows of sorrow to darken his pathway until, ceasing from his wanderings in the dream world of matter, he comes back to his home in the reality of the eternal. As the smallest drop of water detached from the ocean contains all the qualities of the ocean, so man, detached in consciousness from the infinite, contains within him its likeness. And as the drop of water must, by the law of its nature, ultimately find its way back to the ocean and lose itself in its silent depths, so must man, by the unfailing law of his nature, at last return to his source and lose himself in the great ocean of the infinite. To re-become one with the infinite is the goal of man. To enter into perfect harmony with the eternal law is wisdom, love, and peace. But this divine state is, and must ever be, incomprehensible to the merely personal. Personality, separateness, selfishness are one and the same, and are the antithesis of wisdom and divinity. By the unqualified surrender of the personality, separateness and selfishness cease, man enters into the possession of his divine heritage of immortality and infinity. Such surrender of the personality is regarded by the worldly and selfish mind as the most grievous of all calamities, the most irreparable loss. Yet it is the one supreme and incomparable blessing, the only real and lasting gain. The mind, unenlightened upon the inner laws of beings and upon the nature and destiny of its own life, clings to transient appearances, things which have in them no enduring substantiality, and so clinging perishes, for the time being, amid the shattered wreckage of its own illusions. Men cling to and gratify the flesh as though it were going to last for ever, and though they try to forget the nearness and inevitability of its dissolution, the dread of death and of the loss of all that they cling to clouds their happiest hours, and the chilling shadow of their own selfishness follows them like a remorseless spectre. And with the accumulation of temporal comforts and luxuries, the divinity within men is drugged, and they sink deeper and deeper into materiality, into the perishable life of the senses, and where there is sufficient intellect, theories concerning the immortality of the flesh come to be regarded as infallible truths. When a man's soul is clouded with selfishness in any or every form, he loses the power of spiritual discrimination, and confuses the temporal with the eternal, the perishable with the permanent, mortality with immortality, and error with truth. It is thus that the world has come to be filled with theories and speculations having no foundation in human experience. Every body of flesh contains within itself, from the hour of birth, the elements of its own destruction, and by the unalterable law of its own nature must it pass away. The perishable in the universe can never become permanent. The permanent can never pass away. The mortal can never become immortal. The immortal can never die. The temporal cannot become eternal, nor the eternal become temporal. Appearance can never become reality, nor reality fade into appearance. Error can never become truth, nor can truth become error. Man cannot immortalize the flesh, but by overcoming the flesh, by relinquishing all its inclinations, he can enter the region of immortality. God alone hath immortality, and only by realizing the God state of consciousness does man enter into immortality. All nature in its myriad forms of life is changeable, impermanent, unenduring. Only the informing principle of nature endures. Nature is many and is marked by separation. The informing principle is one and is marked by unity. By overcoming the senses and the selfishness within, which is the overcoming of nature, man emerges from the chrysalis of the personal and illusory, and wings himself into the glorious light of the impersonal, the region of universal truth, out of which all perishable forms come. Let men, therefore, practice self-denial. Let them conquer their animal inclinations. Let them refuse to be enslaved by luxury and pleasure. Let them practice virtue, and grow daily into high and ever higher virtue, until at last they grow into the divine, and enter into both the practice and the comprehension of humility, meekness, forgiveness, compassion, and love, which practice and comprehension constitute divinity. Goodwill gives insight, and only he who has so conquered his personality that he has but one attitude of mind, that of goodwill, toward all creatures, is possessed of divine insight, and is capable of distinguishing the true from the false. The supremely good man is, therefore, the wise man, the divine man, the enlightened seer, the knower of the eternal. Where you find unbroken gentleness, enduring patience, sublime lowliness, graciousness of speech, self-control, self-forgetfulness, and deep and abounding sympathy, look there for the highest wisdom. Seek the company of such a one, for he has realized the divine. He lives with the eternal. He has become one with the infinite. Believe not him that is impatient, given to anger, boastful, who clings to pleasure and refuses to renounce his selfish gratifications, and who practices not goodwill and far-reaching compassion, for such a one hath not wisdom. Vain is all his knowledge, and his works and words will perish, for they are grounded on that which passes away. Let a man abandon self. Let him overcome the world. Let him deny the personal. By this pathway only can he enter into the heart of the infinite. The world, the body, the personality, are mirages upon the desert of time, transitory dreams in the dark night of spiritual slumber. And those who have crossed the desert, those who are spiritually awakened, have alone comprehended the universal reality where all appearances are dispersed and dreaming and delusion are destroyed. There is one great law which exacts unconditional obedience, one unifying principle which is the basis of all diversity, one eternal truth wherein all the problems of earth pass away like shadows. To realize this law, this unity, this truth, is to enter into the infinite, is to become one with the eternal. To center one's life in the great law of love is to enter into rest, harmony, peace. To refrain from all participation in evil and discord. To cease from all resistance to evil and from the omission of that which is good, and to fall back upon unswerving obedience to the holy calm within, is to enter into the innermost heart of things, is to attain to a living, conscious experience of that eternal and infinite principle, which must ever remain a hidden mystery to the merely perceptive intellect. Until this principle is realized, the soul is not established in peace, and he who so realizes is truly wise. Not wise with the wisdom of the learned, but with the simplicity of a blameless heart and of a divine manhood. To enter into a realization of the infinite and eternal is to rise superior to time and the world and the body which comprise the kingdom of darkness, and is to become established in immortality, heaven and the spirit, which makes up the empire of light. Entering into the infinite is not a mere theory or sentiment. It is a vital experience which is the result of assiduous practice in inward purification. When the body is no longer believed to be, even remotely, the real man, when all appetites and desires are thoroughly subdued and purified, when the emotions are rested and calm, and when the oscillation of the intellect ceases and perfect poise is secured, then, and not till then, does consciousness become one with the infinite. Not until then is childlike wisdom and profound peace secured. Men grow weary and grey over the dark problems of life, and finally pass away and leave them unsolved, because they cannot see their way out of the darkness of the personality, being too much engrossed in its limitations. Seeking to save his personal life, man forfeits the greater impersonal life in truth. Clinging to the perishable, he is shut out from a knowledge of the eternal. By the surrender of self, all difficulties are overcome, and there is no error in the universe, but the fire of inward sacrifice will burn it up like chaff. No problem, however great, but will disappear like a shadow under the searching light of self-abnegation. Problems exist only in our own self-created illusions, and they vanish away when self is yielded up. Self and error are synonymous. Error is involved in the darkness of unfathomable complexity, but eternal simplicity is the glory of truth. Love of self shuts men out from truth, and seeking their own personal happiness, they lose the deeper, purer, and more abiding bliss. Says Carlyle, "There is in man a higher than love of happiness. He can do without happiness, and instead thereof find blessedness. Love not pleasure, love God. This is the everlasting yea, wherein all contradiction is solved, wherein whoso walks and works, it is well with him." He who has yielded up that self, that personality that men most love, and to which they cling with such fierce tenacity, has left behind him all perplexity, and has entered into a simplicity so profoundly simple as to be looked upon by the world involved as it is in a network of error, as foolishness. Yet such a one has realized the highest wisdom and is at rest in the infinite. He accomplishes without striving, and all problems melt before him, for he has entered the region of reality and deals not with changing effects, but with the unchanging principles of things. He is enlightened with a wisdom which is as superior to ratiocination as reason is to animality. Having yielded up his lusts, his errors, his opinions and prejudices, he has entered into possession of the knowledge of God, having slain the selfish desire for heaven, and along with it, the ignorant fear of hell. Having relinquished even the love of life itself, he has gained supreme bliss and life eternal, the life which bridges life and death, and knows its own immortality. Having yielded up all without reservation, he has gained all, and rests in peace on the bosom of the infinite. Only he who has become so free from self as to be equally content to be annihilated as to live, or to live as to be annihilated, is fit to enter into the infinite. Only he who, ceasing to trust his perishable self, has learned to trust in boundless measure the great law, the supreme good, is prepared to partake of undying bliss. For such a one there is no more regret, nor disappointment, nor remorse, for where all selfishness has ceased, these sufferings cannot be. And whatever happens to him, he knows that it is for his own good, and he is content, being no longer the servant of self, but the servant of the Supreme. He is no longer affected by the changes of earth, and when he hears of wars and rumors of wars, his peace is not disturbed. And where men grow angry and cynical and quarrelsome, he bestows compassion and love. Though appearances may contradict it, he knows that the world is progressing, and that through its laughing and its weeping, through its living and its keeping, through its follies and its labors weaving in and out of sight, to the end from the beginning, through all virtue and all sinning, reeled from God's great spool of progress, runs the golden thread of light. When a fierce storm is raging, none are angered about it, because they know it will quickly pass away. And when the storms of contention are devastating the world, the wise man, looking with the eye of truth and pity, knows that it will pass away, and that out of the wreckage of broken hearts which it leaves behind, the immortal temple of wisdom will be built. Sublimely patient, infinitely compassionate, deep, silent, and pure, his very presence is a benediction. And when he speaks, men ponder his words in their hearts, and by them rise to higher levels of attainment. Such is he who has entered into the infinite, who by the power of utmost sacrifice has solved the sacred mystery of life. Questioning life and destiny and truth, I sought the dark and labyrinthine Sphinx, who spake to me this strange and wondrous thing. Concealment only lies in blinded eyes, and God alone can see the form of God. I sought to solve this hidden mystery vainly by paths of blindness and of pain, but when I found the way of love and peace, concealment ceased, and I was blind no more. Then saw I God, e'en with the eyes of God. 6. Saints, Sages, and Saviors. The Law of Service. The spirit of love, which is manifested as a perfect and rounded life, is the crown of being and the supreme end of knowledge upon this earth. The measure of a man's truth is the measure of his love, and truth is far removed from him whose life is not governed by love. The intolerant and condemnatory, even though they profess the highest religion, have the smallest measure of truth. While those who exercise patience and who listen calmly and dispassionately to all sides, and both arrive themselves at and incline others to thoughtful and unbiased conclusions upon all problems and issues, have truth in fullest measure. The final test of wisdom is this. How does a man live? What spirit does he manifest? How does he act under trial and temptation? Many men boast of being in possession of truth, who are continually swayed by grief, disappointment, and passion, and who sink under the first little trial that comes along. Truth is nothing if not unchangeable, and in so far as a man takes his stand upon truth, does he become steadfast in virtue, does he rise superior to his passions and emotions and changeable personality. Men formulate perishable dogmas and call them truth. Truth cannot be formulated. It is ineffable, and ever beyond the reach of intellect. It can only be experienced by practice. it can only be manifested as a stainless heart and a perfect life. Who, then, in the midst of the ceaseless pandemonium of schools and creeds and parties, has the truth? He who lives it, he who practices it. He who, having risen above that pandemonium by overcoming himself, no longer engages in it, but sits apart, quiet, subdued, calm and self-possessed, freed from all strife, all bias, all condemnation, and bestows upon all the glad and unselfish love of the divinity within him. He who is patient, calm, gentle, and forgiving under all circumstances manifests the truth. Truth will never be proved by wordy arguments and learned treatises, for if men do not perceive the truth in infinite patience, undying forgiveness, and all-embracing compassion, no words can ever prove it to them. It is an easy matter for the passionate to be calm and patient when they are alone, or are in the midst of calmness. It is equally easy for the uncharitable to be gentle and kind when they are dealt kindly with. But he who retains his patience and calmness under all trial, who remains sublimely meek and gentle under the most trying circumstances, he, and he alone, is possessed of the spotless truth. And this is so because such lofty virtues belong to the divine, and can only be manifested by one who has attained to the highest wisdom, who has relinquished his passionate and self-seeking nature, who has realized the supreme and unchangeable law, and has brought himself into harmony with it. Let men, therefore, cease from vain and passionate arguments about truth, and let them think and say and do those things which make for harmony, peace, love, and goodwill. Let them practice heart virtue, and search humbly and diligently for the truth which frees the soul from all error and sin, from all that blights the human heart, and that darkens, as with unending night, the pathway of the wandering souls of earth. There is one great all-embracing law, which is the foundation and cause of the universe, the law of love. It has been called by many names in various countries and at various times, but behind all its names the same unalterable law may be discovered by the eye of truth. Names, religions, personalities pass away, but the law of love remains. To become possessed of a knowledge of this law, to enter into conscious harmony with it, is to become immortal, invincible, indestructible. It is because of the effort of the soul to realize this law that men come again and again to live, to suffer, and to die. And when realized, suffering ceases, personality is dispersed, and the fleshly life and death are destroyed, for consciousness becomes one with the eternal. The law is absolutely impersonal, and its highest manifested expression is that of service. When the purified heart has realized truth, it is then called upon to make the last, the greatest and holiest sacrifice, the sacrifice of the well-earned enjoyment of truth. It is by virtue of this sacrifice that the divinely emancipated soul comes to dwell among men, clothed with a body of flesh, content to dwell among the lowliest and least, and to be esteemed the servant of all mankind. That sublime humility which is manifested by the world's saviors, is the seal of Godhead. And he who has annihilated the personality and has become a living, visible manifestation of the impersonal, eternal, boundless spirit of love, is alone singled out as worthy to receive the unstinted worship of posterity. He only who succeeds in humbling himself with that divine humility which is not only the extinction of self, but is also the pouring out upon all the spirit of unselfish love, is exalted above measure and given spiritual dominion in the hearts of mankind. All the great spiritual teachers have denied themselves personal luxuries, comforts, and rewards, have abjured temporal power, and have lived and taught the limitless and impersonal truth. Compare their lives and teachings, and you will find the same simplicity, the same self-sacrifice, the same humility, love, and peace, both lived and preached by them. They taught the same eternal principles, the realization of which destroys all evil. Those who have been hailed and worshipped as the saviors of mankind are manifestations of the great impersonal law, and being such, we're free from passion and prejudice, and having no opinions and no special letter of doctrine to preach and defend, they never sought to convert and to proselytize. Living in the highest goodness, the supreme perfection, their sole object was to uplift mankind by manifesting that goodness in thought, word, and deed. They stand between man, the personal, and God, the impersonal, and serve as exemplary types for the salvation of self-enslaved mankind. Men who are immersed in self and who cannot comprehend the goodness that is absolutely impersonal deny divinity to all saviors except their own, and thus introduce personal hatred and doctrinal controversy, and while defending their own particular views with passion, look upon each other as being heathens or infidels, and so render null and void, as far as their lives are concerned, the unselfish beauty and holy grandeur of the lives and teachings of their own masters. Truth cannot be limited. It can never be the special prerogative of any man, school, or nation. And when personality steps in, truth is lost. The glory alike of the saint, the sage, and the savior is this, that he has realized the most profound lowliness, the most sublime unselfishness. Having given up all, even his own personality, all his works are holy and enduring, for they are freed from every taint of self. He gives, yet never thinks of receiving. He works without regretting the past or anticipating the future, and never looks for reward. When the farmer has tilled and dressed his land and put in the seed, he knows that he has done all that he can possibly do, and that now he must trust to the elements, and wait patiently for the course of time to bring about the harvest, and that no amount of expectancy on his part will affect the result. Even so, he who has realized truth goes forth as a sower of the seeds of goodness, purity, love, and peace, without expectancy, and never looking for results, knowing that there is the great overruling law, which brings about its own harvest in due time, and which is alike the source of preservation and destruction. Men, not understanding the divine simplicity of a profoundly unselfish heart, look upon their particular Saviour as the manifestation of a special miracle, as being something entirely apart and distinct from the nature of things, and as being, in his ethical excellence, eternally unapproachable by the whole of mankind. This attitude of unbelief, for such it is, in the divine perfectibility of man, paralyzes effort and binds the souls of men as with strong ropes to sin and suffering. Jesus grew in wisdom and was perfected by suffering. What Jesus was, he became such. What Buddha was, he became such. And every holy man became such by unremitting perseverance in self-sacrifice. Once recognize this. Once realize that by watchful effort and hopeful perseverance you can rise above your lower nature, and great and glorious will be the vistas of attainment that will open out before you. Buddha vowed that he would not relax his efforts until he arrived at the state of perfection, and he accomplished his purpose. What the saints, sages, and saviors have accomplished, you likewise may accomplish, if you will only tread the way which they trod and pointed out, the way of self-sacrifice, of self-denying service. Truth is very simple. It says, give up self. Come unto me, away from all that defiles, and I will give you rest. All the mountains of commentary that have been piled upon it cannot hide it from the heart that is earnestly seeking for righteousness. It does not require learning. It can be known in spite of learning. Disguised under many forms by erring self-seeking man, the beautiful simplicity and clear transparency of truth remains unaltered and undimmed, and the unselfish heart enters into and partakes of its shining radiance. Not by weaving complex theories, not by building up speculative philosophies is truth realized, but by weaving the web of inward purity. By building up the temple of a stainless life, is truth realized. He who enters upon this holy way begins by restraining his passions. This is virtue, and is the beginning of saintship, and saintship is the beginning of holiness. The entire worldly man gratifies all his desires and practices no more restraint than the law of the land in which he lives demands. The virtuous man restrains his passions. The saint attacks the enemy of truth in its stronghold within his own heart and restrains all selfish and impure thoughts, while the holy man is he who is free from passion and all impure thought, and to whom goodness and purity have become as natural as scent and colour are to the flower. The holy man is divinely wise. He alone knows truth in its fullness, and has entered into abiding rest and peace. For him evil has ceased. It has disappeared in the universal light of the all-goodness. Holiness is the badge of wisdom, said Krishna to the prince Arjuna. Humbleness, truthfulness and harmlessness, patience and honour, reverence for the wise, purity, constancy, control of self, contempt of sense delights, self-sacrifice, perception of the certitude of ill in birth, death, age, disease, suffering and sin, an ever tranquil heart in fortune's good and fortune's evil, endeavours resolute to reach perception of the utmost soul, and grace to understand what gain it were so to attain. This is true wisdom, prince, and what is otherwise is ignorance. Whoever fights ceaselessly against his own selfishness and strives to supplant it with an all-embracing love is a saint, whether he lives in a cottage or in the midst of riches and influence, or whether he preaches or remains obscure. To the worldling who is beginning to aspire towards higher things, the saint, such as sweet St. Francis of Assisi or a conquering St. Anthony, is a glorious and inspiring spectacle. To the saint, an equally enrapturing sight is that of the sage, sitting serene and holy, the conqueror of sin and sorrow, no more tormented by regret and remorse, and whom even temptation can never reach. And yet even the sage is drawn on by a still more glorious vision, that of the Saviour, actively manifesting his knowledge in selfless works, and rendering his divinity more potent for good by sinking himself in the throbbing, sorrowing, aspiring heart of mankind. And this only is true service, to forget oneself in love towards all, to lose oneself in working for the whole. O thou vain and foolish man, who thinkest that thy many works can save thee, who, chained to all error, talkest loudly of thyself, thy work, and thy many sacrifices, and magnifiest thine own importance. Know this, that though thy fame fill the whole earth, all thy work shall come to dust, and thou thyself be reckoned lower than the least in the kingdom of truth. Only the work that is impersonal can live. The works of self are both powerless and perishable. Where duties, howsoever humble, are done without self-interest and with joyful sacrifice, there is true service and enduring work. Where deeds, however brilliant and apparently successful, are done from love of self, there is ignorance of the law of service, and the work perishes. It is given to the world to learn one great and divine lesson, the lesson of absolute unselfishness. The saints, sages, and saviours of all time are they who have submitted themselves to this task, and have learned and lived it. All the scriptures of the world are framed to teach this one lesson. All the great teachers reiterate it. It is too simple for the world which, scorning it, stumbles along in the complex ways of selfishness. A pure heart is the end of all religion and the beginning of divinity. To search for this righteousness is to walk the way of truth and peace, and he who enters this way will soon perceive that immortality, which is independent of birth and death, and will realize that in the divine economy of the universe, the humblest effort is not lost. The divinity of a Krishna, a Gautama, or a Jesus is the crowning glory of self-abnegation, the end of the soul's pilgrimage in matter and mortality, and the world will not have finished its long journey until every soul has become as these, and has entered into the blissful realization of its own divinity. Great glory crowns the heights of hope by arduous struggles won. Bright honour rounds the hoary head that mighty works have done. Fair riches come to him who strives in ways of golden gain, and fame enshrines his name who works with genius glowing brain. But greater glory waits for him who in the bloodless strife against self and wrong adopts in love the sacrificial life, and brighter honour rounds the brow of him who mid the scorns of blind idolaters of self accepts the crown of thorns, and fairer, purer riches come to him who greatly strives to walk in ways of love and truth to sweeten human lives. And he who serveth well mankind exchanges fleeting fame for light eternal, joy and peace, and robes of heavenly flame. 7. The Realization of Perfect Peace. In the external universe, there is ceaseless turmoil, change, and unrest. At the heart of all things, there is undisturbed repose. In this deep silence dwelleth the eternal. Man partakes of this duality, and both the surface change and disquietude and the deep-seated eternal abode of peace are contained within him. As there are silent depths in the ocean which the fiercest storm cannot reach, so there are silent, holy depths in the heart of man, which the storms of sin and sorrow can never disturb. To reach this silence, and to live consciously in it, is peace. Discord is rife in the outward world, but unbroken harmony holds sway at the heart of the universe. The human soul, torn by discordant passion and grief, reaches blindly toward the harmony of the sinless state. And to reach this state and to live consciously in it is peace. Hatred severs human lives, fosters persecution, and hurls nations into ruthless war. Yet men, though they do not understand why, retain some measure of faith in the overshadowing of a perfect love. And to reach this love and to live consciously in it is peace. And this inward peace, this silence, this harmony, this love, is the kingdom of heaven, which is so difficult to reach because few are willing to give up themselves and to become as little children. Heaven's gate is very narrow and minute. It cannot be perceived by foolish men blinded by vain illusions of the world. Even the clear-sighted who discern the way and seek to enter find the portal barred and hard to be unlocked. Its massive bolts are pride and passion, avarice and lust. Men cry, "Peace, peace," where there is no peace, but on the contrary, discord, disquietude, and strife. Apart from that wisdom which is inseparable from self-renunciation, there can be no real and abiding peace. The peace which results from social comfort, passing gratification, or worldly victory, is transitory in its nature, and is burnt up in the heat of fiery trial. Only the peace of heaven endures through all trial, and only the selfless heart can know the peace of heaven. Holiness alone is undying peace. Self-control leads to it, and the ever-increasing light of wisdom guides the pilgrim on his way. It is partaken of in a measure as soon as the path of virtue is entered upon, but it is only realized in its fullness when self disappears in the consummation of a stainless life. This is peace, to conquer love of self and lust of life, to tear deep-rooted passion from the heart, to still the inward strife. If, O reader, you would realize the light that never fades, the joy that never ends, and the tranquility that cannot be disturbed, if you would leave behind forever your sins, your sorrows, your anxieties and perplexities, if, I say, you would partake of this salvation, this supremely glorious life, then conquer yourself. Bring every thought, every impulse, every desire into perfect obedience to the divine power resident within you. There is no other way to peace but this, and if you refuse to walk it, your much praying and your strict adherence to ritual will be fruitless and unavailing, and neither gods nor angels can help you. Only to him that overcometh is given the white stone of the regenerate life, on which is written the new and ineffable name. Come away for a while from external things, from the pleasures of the senses, from the arguments of the intellect, from the noise and the excitements of the world, and withdraw yourself into the inmost chamber of your heart, and there, free from the sacrilegious intrusion of all selfish desires, you will find a deep silence, a holy calm, a blissful repose. And if you will rest a while in that holy place and will meditate there, the faultless eye of truth will open within you, and you will see things as they really are. This holy place within you is your real and eternal self. It is the divine within you, and only when you identify yourself with it can you be said to be clothed and in your right mind. It is the abode of peace, the temple of wisdom, the dwelling place of immortality. Apart from this inward resting place, this mount of vision, there can be no true peace, no knowledge of the divine. And if you can remain there for 1 minute, for 1 hour, or 1 day, it is possible for you to remain there always. All your sins and sorrows, your fears and anxieties are your own, and you can cling to them or you can give them up. Of your own accord, you cling to your unrest. Of your own accord, you can come to abiding peace. No one else can give up sin for you. You must give it up yourself. The greatest teacher can do no more than walk the way of truth for himself and point it out to you. You yourself must walk it for yourself. You can obtain freedom and peace alone by your own efforts, by yielding up that which binds the soul and which is destructive of peace. The angels of divine peace and joy are always at hand. And if you do not see them and hear them and dwell with them, it is because you shut yourself out from them and prefer the company of the spirits of evil within you. You are what you will to be, what you wish to be, what you prefer to be. You can commence to purify yourself and by so doing can arrive at peace, or you can refuse to purify yourself and so remain with suffering. Step aside then. Come out of the fret and the fever of life, away from the scorching heat of self, and enter the inward resting place where the cooling airs of peace will calm, renew, and restore you. Come out of the storms of sin and anguish. Why be troubled and tempest-tossed when the haven of peace of God is yours? Give up all self-seeking. Give up self, and lo, the peace of God is yours. Subdue the animal within you. Conquer every selfish uprising, every discordant voice. Transmute the base metals of your selfish nature into the unalloyed gold of love, and you shall realize the life of perfect peace. Thus subduing, thus conquering, thus transmuting, you will, O reader, while living in the flesh, cross the dark waters of mortality, and will reach that shore upon which the storms of sorrow never beat, and where sin and suffering and dark uncertainty cannot come. Standing upon that shore, holy, compassionate, awakened and self-possessed, and glad with unending gladness, you will realize that never the Spirit was born, the Spirit will cease to be never. Never was time, it was not. End and beginning are dreams. Birthless and deathless, and changeless remaineth the Spirit for ever. Death hath not touched it at all, dead though the house of it seems. You will then know the meaning of sin, of sorrow, of suffering, and that the end thereof is wisdom. Will know the cause and the issue of existence. And with this realization, you will enter into rest, for this is the bliss of immortality, this the unchangeable gladness, this the untrammeled knowledge, undefiled wisdom, and undying love. This, and this only, is the realization of perfect peace. O thou who wouldst teach men of truth, hast thou passed through the desert of doubt? Art thou purged by the fires of sorrow? Have truth the fiends of opinion cast out of thy human heart? Is thy soul so fair that no false thought can ever harbour there. O thou who wouldst teach men of love, hast thou passed through the place of despair? Hast thou wept through the dark night of grief? Does it move, now freed from its sorrow and care, thy human heart to pitying gentleness, looking on wrong and hate and ceaseless stress? O thou who wouldst teach men of peace, hast thou crossed the wide ocean of strife? Hast thou found on the shores of the silence release from all the wild unrest of life? From thy human heart hath all striving gone, leaving but truth and love and peace alone. This concludes As a Man Thinketh, and From Poverty to Power.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.